we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC News website read by Harriet Cass.
Labour candidate Manish Sood has described Gordon Brown as the worst Prime Minister we've had in this country. The chairman of his constituency party responded, saying, despite having such a dreadful candidate, we will continue to put the case for Gordon Brown.
And our thanks to everyone who sent that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Jack Dee. And opposite them on my left, Sue Perkins and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, why are we waiting?
Well, it's the mother of all parliaments, as Westminster is now rightly known, because it's a frightful muddle, and no one knows who's won, because everybody's lost. No, I mean, where we go from here is not at all clear. I think probably the pub might be the thing. Then we could have a hungover parliament. But it's all to do with the Lib Dems, and so everyone is being nice to them. It's actually one of the most nauseating things on the all-night coverage, is the amount of billing and cooing and heavy petting from Peter Mandelson. Every time any Lib Dem came on, Peter was doing his Leslie Phillips thing. Hello. I think it was Simon Hughes was being interviewed by Paxman, and Paxman said, could you imagine getting into bed with Peter Mandelson? Stunned silence. I mean, I'm sure we've all asked ourselves that question occasionally, but I was really hoping that Jeremy Vine would do one of his bonkers graphics at that point and say, we've got a virtual bed here with a virtual mammals in it, with virtual Jim Jams, and let's see, can he get 50 Lib Dems into his bed? Oh, look, the duvet's turned orange.
It suddenly put that phrase, and they keep saying the situation's very fluid. It made it quite unpleasant, hasn't it?
Well, there was a lot of that going on.
Yes.
It was very sexual, didn't you think? Especially because they had this weird thing with Andrew Neil, the great boulevardier. They kept cutting away to him. And he said, and now here to discuss the fiscal crisis, we have Joan Collins and Martin Amis. Well, it's a completely randomly chosen juxtapositions. We've got Bruce Forsyth and Simon Sharma talking about the constitutional implications of a hung parliament. The late Jay Goody and Isaiah Berlin will be arriving shortly.
I like the idea that the British public have spoken and come to this decision. So the British public have all got together and decided that the best thing would be to have a sort of completely impotent Tory government that can't do anything and to give the Liberals a kicking even though they really like them.
Did you not feel that Nick Clegg is the sort of anti-Susan Boyle? Originally nobody knew who he was, and then everybody was pleasantly surprised by what came out of his mouth, and then they didn't vote for him anyway.
Overnight, he up until about 4 o'clock, because I was up all night. Up until about 4 o'clock, it was Swede Clegg that Kirsty Walk was talking to, and he became increasingly dark and monosyllabic and brooding as he realised that actually the fewer votes he got, the more powerful he was becoming. Until there was a sense at around about 6 o'clock that inside, and little cogs of his brain were going, "Dance for me, Gordon. Take your top. Don't look at me. Just take your top off."
But terrifying. Every time you see William Hague looming up, it's like Freddy Krueger preparing. Emerging from the grave to kill once again.
I like Brown's statement where he reminded us that he's still the Prime Minister because he's just got a few more hours and he's just like, and we're still doing things and Alistair Darling is still going to some meetings and I've got to phone somebody in Kyrgyzstan, I think.
In this country, when they make a big statement, in the United States, when they make a big statement, they do it in the Rose Garden and they have this big thing and there's the presidential seal and there's lots of fanfares and so on. We have a music stand that's put out in number 10 and plugged in and the cable goes all the way in through the door. Can I just update you, as we're recording, as things are actually happening, they're offering an all-party committee on electoral reform. You can imagine the excitement up and down the country. How many people are going to understand this? There's a referendum on AV. All I know is that that's one of the buttons on the television when I press the...
I like the STV, which is the sexually transmitted vote.
But we shouldn't forget that this has been a once-in-a-generation anti-climax. You know, we're very lucky to have lived through it. Yeah. I don't think disappointment will ever be the same again. Whenever I feel let down, I think, yeah, but you remember 2010? That really was very special, wasn't it?
You've got to feel sorry for the BNP, because it'll be at least a few weeks before they figure out they haven't won anything.
I'm a bit worried about Gordon Brown there, because it's not done his tick any good, is it? when he made that speech out in front of Downing Street, it was much worse. His jaw's gone into overtime now.
He suggested that he might go and do some charity work after he leaves Number 10. He says, I want to do some good. You think, well, it's not too late.
What Brown should do, really, is go to the palace to see the Queen, which he has to do at some point, and say, look, here's the deal, OK. Now, what I'm saying to you isn't really democratic, but you know all about that, don't you, Your Majesty? You see, the thing is, we could have a Conservative government because they got the most seats, but bear in mind that the Chancellor of the Exchequer will then be George Osborne. Now, you know how you feel about your son becoming king, OK? We'll try and translate those feelings into Osborne, but, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So if you can just give me the Grenadier Guards and some tanks... to stay on.
There was this constant use of this phrase about government having to continue. The Queen's business must be carried on. You'd have thought she could open the gin and fill in the betting slips by herself.
She's not available till 1 p.m.
What's she doing?
Well, she's got stuff. She's got the corgis to walk.
She's got stuff going on.
I suppose she's got to answer a few letters.
Well, she's got to watch Jeremy Kyle as well.
She loves it.
Do you think she's all glib and but she sort of plays it off when Gordon Brown goes and sort of asks her what he's talk about his intentions? She says, oh, yes, I had heard. What has happened in the election? Go on, just tell me. Remind me. I didn't actually catch up.
Did you see little Sarah Tether? Oh, bless. She's quite sweet,
the little
Sarah
chinchilla of the Lib Dems.
And she got in and she didn't know, and they went over to her and they said, so, Sarah Tether, what do you think about what's going on? She said, Judah, I'm so tired. I've no idea what's going on. And it was like, mother, father, I've had the most amazing dream.
Who stayed? I managed to stay up until 2 a.m. Oh, and then I fell asleep on this box of ballot papers I was supposed to be counting. After that...
I stayed up until about 10:45. I wanted to see Sunderland do their little thing, because they love doing that.
What, the running children with the boxes?
Yeah.
Is that like that thing where they roll cheese down hills?
It was like, it's a knockout. You just need a Stuart Hall voiceover. And the Sun in page three, this morning's page three, is instead of the sort of normal topless model, they've got some poor student with her boobs half hanging out, frantically counting ballot papers. They've obviously gone, well, we've got no money for a model, take a picture. And this half-disguised waps on a sort of crouching student. Page three, if you're interested.
I think someone should tell Sunderland that it's actually the first people to count the votes. That doesn't mean you've won the election. It's just a thing that you started and no one is actually that interested in.
Did you see the start of the BBC coverage? Because Dimbleby suddenly turned into Jules Holland. It was a sort of strange thing. It was like a big group. On bass, it's Fiona Bruce. On sax, Nick Robinson. Getting on my tits, Jeremy Vine.
Jeremy Vine, his whole life has become CGI, isn't it? You kept expecting him to start talking to Roger Rabbit, didn't you? When his house is like that.
I think Jeremy Vine looked like an extra from Avatar. He was kind of flying around the studio. He developed wings at one point, and David Dimbleby had this big gauntlet, and he landed on it. He's actually turned into a bird of prey, and they asked him his opinion. Jeremy, what do you think?
Britain looks set to be heading for a hung parliament, with the Conservatives having won the most seats but not an overall majority. David Cameron made a big speech in Opus 2 this afternoon, showing a brave willingness to flout convention and a cavalier disregard for the production schedule of the news quiz. The results mean that there's still a chance for Gordon Brown to remain as Prime Minister. All he needs is for the Lib Dems and Conservatives to refuse to cooperate, nobody in his party to stage a leadership contest, and for the rest of the country to be struck down with a paralysing illness. So he remains hopeful. 2 points to Francis. Sue, have a listen to this. You say goodbye. Biggest winners and losers of the night.
Oh, well, biggest winner, I think, Caroline Lucas. Brighton Pavilion for the Greens, a lovely moment for her. I think the saddest thing for me, Lembit Opik, who, it proved one cheeky girl too many for him. He had this slight smirk as the officer started reading out the results of someone who was thinking, I've just texted a picture of my winky to Lily Allen. You know, that kind of thing. And it took about an hour and a half for him to actually physically remove that from his face. He almost didn't realise he'd lost and was forced into a slightly savage interview with Jeremy Paxman afterwards. Esther Ranson, sadly, her lack of policies but her love of dogs saying sausages and irregular-shaped vegetables failed to convince the Luton electorate that she really was their woman. And, of course, a massive sort of sizing down of previous Home Secretary. So Charles Clarke went and little Jackie Smith, who went home to watch Titanic with her husband. Fabulous movie. When the ship hits the ice, they all go down. And at least they won't be charging it back to us, the British public. So all good. But yes, and all these wins and losses played out against the spectre of Andrew Neil going back to the boat with Noam Chomsky and Fluella Benjamin, looking google-eyed and despairing as they were asked serious questions. So yeah, it was a mixed bag.
Charles Clarke losing to the Lib Dems by a narrow margin must be the very first time the words narrow margin have been applied to Charles Clarke. Is it weird to have come out of this feeling sorry for Nigel Farage? That's an odd thing.
It was. The UKIP campaign didn't really take off, did it?
The Nigel Farage thing is strange, because he stood against the Speaker, John Bercow. Normally, I mean, the tradition is that nobody puts a candidate up against the Speaker. He's supposed to do it unopposed. And actually, there was a terrible moment. I did, because it was not funny, it was awful about the plane thing, but you did think that Bercow was seeing off the challenge to his Buckingham seat with a surface-to-air missile. It was a sort of... a Polish fixed-wing aircraft, which I was probably treated by a German doctor.
Jackie Smith, I just thought, God, her husband is not going to be looking forward to seeing her when she gets in.
She likes to watch telly on his own, doesn't he?
Yeah.
You'll be in the box room with the lights turned down.
But her distant relation, Zachy Goldsmith, has gotten his near Zach. Son of that maniac, Jimmy Goldsmith.
Yes. Zach Goldsmith will know never to stand next to that friend of his again. If anyone saw it, he found the worst hooray he could possibly...
Let's go surfing down in Cornwall. It'll be fantastic. And then we have a big bottle of Krug afterwards and then go and whip some chimney sweeps. It'll be fantastic. Hurrah!
Ed Balls avoiding his Portillo moment was very good. Managing... I don't know. Actually, I didn't know originally what a Portillo moment was. I thought it was resisting the temptation to get drunk on a sofa next to Diane Abbott, but it's it's not losing your seat in a big manner. Did you see his speech at all?
Yeah, I mean, pretty smug, pretty, you know... I think he wasn't really acknowledging how close he'd come to a total humiliation.
But he does this very strange delivery. It's as if he's in the process of learning how to talk.
He is in the
Hazel
process.
Hazel Blears.
She survived.
Yes.
Talking of chipmunks.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
The little ginger guinea pig is with us still.
Her seat is Salford and Eccles, or Eccles and Salford, depending on which way she's flipped them. We finally saw George Osborne, because he's been kept very quiet. It was like he'd been unchained from a radiator in a basement and allowed to accept something.
Shame they didn't have John Prescott on hand to make sense of it all.
Yeah.
But Lebit Opik is an odd man. He looks like he's made out of plasticine by Nick Parks or something. Wallace and Gromit character.
And Nick Griffin, my favourite, blamed his rout on immigrants who didn't vote for him.
It's a conspiracy, isn't it?
It was a night of winners and losers, but the real losers were those of us who sat up half the night watching it. Other losers, Nick Griffin failed to win the first seat for the BNP despite standing in the aptly named constituency of Barking. Lembit Opik lost his Montgomeryshire seat to the Tories, although it does free him up to return to the mothership with news of his learnings from the Earth People. Amongst the winners, Hazel Blears won, despite one of her election pledges being to spend more time with her homes. And Caroline Lucas is now the first Green MP in the House of Commons since 1967, when colleagues noticed a Tory backbencher had actually been dead for 5 years. Let me tell you, at the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Jack have got 2 points, but so too have Sue and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting from the BBC News website.
Westminster Council's head of administrative services has said not all clothing is acceptable in the voting booth. Pyjamas are fine, as long as they're not indecent. So is a builder who's stripped to the waist. But a topless woman would be inappropriate, as voters might get distracted.
And our thanks to Crystal O'Rourke for sending us that. Jack, have a listen to this. Jack, who were locked out of the leadership question?
Well, this is to do with all the people who had to queue around the block to vote. Mm. And just as they got there, they shut the door on them and they weren't allowed in. Obviously, the whole thing is run by people who work for the post office. It must have been very, very frustrating for them. And I was lucky. I mean, I voted 6 times and I didn't have to queue once. It's fine. Just run home, get dressed into a different outfit, and there I was again. Very frustrating for them, and of course, not knowing what was going on as well was difficult. I decided to vote for the most persistent canvasser in my area, so I voted Mormon. Didn't hear what happened to them. It was difficult keeping up with it all, unless you're about 6 years old, because they put that thing projected on Big Ben, didn't they? That was good.
Did you not get a sense people would rather have seen Gail Porter's bottom up there?
You can always see that somewhere else, can't you?
Do you think she'd have minded showing the 6% swing to the right?
I blame Simon Sharma for the... No, he wasn't. It wasn't Simon Sharma. It was Ben Kingsley, yes. Famous yes. from Gandhi and Seven Dwarfs for Seven Samurai. And he... They came to him after Brucey and they said, well, what do you think about this election? He just said, well, it just makes me think of the wonderful importance of the first time that black people were able to vote in South Africa and the heartwarming... And I thought, well, it might make you think of that, I suppose. I mean, it could make you think of the earthquake scene in San Francisco or, you know, it could make you think of the birth of Christ.
Which was extraordinary, because one of the things they said was hundreds of voters were turned away from polling stations after officials were caught out. And you think, did they not realise there was an election? I'm... Sure, it's been in a few of the papers.
But also, it's going to drag on for days, because the BBC News website has put up this thing saying, send us your tales of polling station frustration. And it's going to be volcanic ash all over again. Yeah. Thousands of anecdotes, each one saying, I think you'd want to hear my story first. I was queuing for an hour outside the polling station, then I was turned away, so I had to hire a pedalo and go to Tenerife to get a postal ballot, then I had to swim to Southampton, and by then it was closed, and it's not fair.
They did manage to not have enough ballot papers, didn't they?
That's good, isn't
some
it?
Some of them. There are a finite number of people that will vote. They know who's coming to vote at that station. So you actually just need to look at the bottom and see that we are going to get 3,400 people to vote today. How many ballot papers do you reckon we'll need? How many are they allowed each? One. Anyone any good at maths here?
Well, Geoffrey Robertson, the QC, says that any voter who got turned away could sue and they could get £750. Now, here's the thing, if you just didn't bother to vote, yeah. I would say, oh, I went along and it was a nightmare. Can I have my £750 for?
What's that free phone number again? But there was a gaggle of students, wasn't there, that threw them in Sheffield?
I'm sure that's not the collective noun for students. Sure. Yeah. There was a laze of students.
Yeah.
A pot noodle of students.
Yeah. And underwhelm of students. they weren't expecting that. They weren't expecting young people and everything. And, yeah, that threw them. But some people thought that maybe it was like the pub, that there'd be sort of like a sort of half-an-hour window where you could sort of hang around. Yeah, like a lock-in and you could just chat to your mates and people say, voting time, please, ladies and gentlemen. That was a very angry woman as well. Did you see the angry woman?
She was shown about 7 times, wasn't
she? Yes, she's very pleased. Yes. She got more and more angry the more television time she realised she was getting. Yeah.
But it was the same clip, just played over and over again.
I was mental by then. Very, very long night.
She said, I'm scandalised. That's a bit saucy, isn't it? Am I the only one who wonders what happens to polling booths when there's not an election? Where do they go? There aren't that many Punch and Judy shows in the country.
I liked the returning officer who said his hands were tied. I thought, oh, people were overexcited.
And you can't use those curtains anywhere, can you?
No.
They only come down to there. Not a very good radio reference, was it, that? It's not like you could use them in a sperm bank, is it?
That's what they use those boxes for when there's no elections.
You really were bored last night, weren't you? A government inquiry. Who's going to run that? A government inquiry has been promised. A government has been promised. And some electoral results may be challenged after dozens of polling stations across the country shut their doors at 10 p.m. whilst people were still queuing to vote outside. In Hackney, there was a sit-in after disgruntled voters realised that the polling station was much nicer than their homes and decided to stay. A long queue formed in Weybridge, Surrey, but voters kept their spirits up by singing songs, passing round biscuits and shunning foreigners. The Daily Mail reacted in a calm and considered manner by comparing our situation to Zimbabwe's. Although some people think it's too early to tell if Cameron's going to be as unpopular as Mugabe. 2 points to Jack. Jeremy, who's not in the market for a hung parliament?
Oh, the markets. Why do we care what the markets think? They're totally... Capitalism is a great idea in theory, but in practice it just doesn't work. The markets are entirely discredited anyway. If we can't make our minds up, we can't make our minds up, and you'll have to wait. We're going to have a hung parliament. We don't know what we're going to do, and you're just going to have to calm down. But they're all saying, oh, we're all a bit disoriented. Oh, no, Britain hasn't decided. Let's do something mental. Let's sell pork bellies cheap. As though they're stable, as though people in the markets are stable and like order. I mean, you know, they're just shouty, testosterone-fueled people who say, we work hard and we play hard, which means they went paintballing once. Why do we care what they think? If we want to take forever sorting out our electoral business, that's up to us.
It is very dull, isn't it? The former head of the CBI, Lord Digby Jones, has said, what everyone wants is boring, predictable stability, and I don't think that's true. I want a new stepladder to reach the top of the fridge. That's So what happens? Who knows about this? What happens if the country goes bust? Does another country move in and take out the fixtures and fittings? What happens?
All I know is I preferred it when we were all borrowing far too much and just having a good time.
Yeah.
I like it in the dark. I just prefer that. Yeah. I don't want to think about the future. You know, just let's borrow loads of money and keep the party going.
Shame, at this point, while we're recording, we don't know who's won, but I do think George Osborne should be Chancellor, because can't his family pay off the debt?
Once he inherits, he's got enough to run the whole show. And wallpaper it as well. This whole country could be wallpapered in 15 minutes.
Do you think David Cameron's going to move into number 10? He's going to find hundreds of unpaid bills kind of hidden behind the curtains. Under the mattress that Gordon didn't tell anybody about. Oh, that, yes, sorry about that. George Osborne will move into number 11, find it's now a student house. And repossessed. News of a hung parliament has rattled the markets. The pound dropped overnight and dozens of ex-MPs scrambled to try to pick it up. Who knew that's what they meant when we were voting for change? In a sign of the times, the new Oxfam gift catalogue now features a goat you can buy for a family in Africa and a pack of chicken nuggets for a family in Preston. 2 points to Jeremy. At the end of round two, it's exactly level. Francis and Jack have got 4 points, but so too have Sue and Jeremy. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from the Metro.
Last night saw a number of surprising defeats for Conservative A-listers, including Sean Bailey, who unexpectedly lost to Sean Bailey in Hammersmith.
Thanks to Joseph Coleman for sending us that. Well, it's 4 points all, and as it is a special occasion, we're going to have a quick deciding question. So everybody have a listen to this. If you're ready to pump me, boy, you better push the button and let me know before I get the wrong idea. Though you're gonna miss the freak that I'm... Can anybody tell me what pressed a pensioner's button and made him cross?
It's the man in Dorset in Chidduck, isn't it?
Yes, although I heard an ooh from...
That was a woo,
from
Simpson.
Ooh,
are
from
we doing
Sue?
The buzz around?
In fairness, I heard the answer from Francis.
Oh, fair enough.
Rather than just think... a ooh.
Right. I'm going to give it to Francis. Tell us a bit more about it, Francis.
No, Sue's going to be upset now.
No!
Let her do it. Let her do it. Now, look, I'm sure we can...
Oh,
we can
no,
come
we've
to some
got a hung quiz.
We can have a... I'm willing
maybe
to make...
Maybe we should offer the most amount of money.
I'm going to make a big open offer to you of a confidence and supply arrangement.
I need to go back and think about it. Do you have any money?
We're now doing cooperative quizzing, and we all get to put on the table whatever it is we wish to talk about and see where we get while the rest of the nation waits.
There's this chappie who's just crossing the road over and over again at the Pelican Crossing because he doesn't like lorries coming through the village. That's all it is.
It says quite a lot about the difference between us and the Greeks, that in Athens, people are facing down the riot police and hurling petrol bombs, and in Dorset, a man is walking backwards and forwards across the road.
It's a very peaceful, gentle thing, and he said if that doesn't work, he's going to release balloons and things like that. It's all very... And if that doesn't work, he's going to run amok at the council with a flamethrower and some grenades from World War II.
And if that doesn't work, he'll bring out the Werther's Originals.
It's very sweet, because he's fed up with the traffic going up and down, so he thought what he would do is slow the traffic down by pressing this button on the pedestrian crossing. Now, it's a great idea, and he's got all his other pensioner friends to do this. And as an initial idea, I think it's terrific, but after a couple of times of crossing the road, do you not think they'll forget why they were crossing it? And
he doesn't really need to do that anyway. All he needs to do is drive in his normal fashion along the A35.
Pensioner Tony Fuller caused a four-mile tailback on the A35 in Chilliock in Dorset by repeatedly using the pedestrian crossing in protest at the number of lorries driving through the village. The protest has had a mixed response in the village. On the one hand, traffic noise has gone down. On the other, they're now overrun by hedgehogs. Mr. Fuller's sense of triumph was cut short when he returned home and found his Meals on Wheels was 4 hours late and stone cold. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Ween.
This was in Wednesday's Guardian, the day before Election Day, in the corrections and clarifications column. An election column alluded to Caitlin Moran's haunting observation that David Cameron looks like R2-D2 made of ham. Actually, Moran's TV review likened Mr. Cameron to C-3PO. Which is true. I mean, the spitting image is uncanny. C-3PO made of ham, that's him.
I can't remember who wrote it. I read somebody said he looks like half a buttock with two eyes. Ms. Perkins.
First of all, a typo. Howard Medwell's column in North London today. Whoever wins this election will take a knife to our pubic services. Beware. But my eye was drawn to this from the Central American News. As part of the Sandinistas' government's Festival of Happy Children, being held all month long, kids can go on amusement park rides, see the clowns at the circus, eat cotton candy, and also try taking aim with a real Soviet-made SAM-7 shoulder-held missile launcher. Happy days.
Mr. Hardy.
It's from the Sunday Times. It says, Eton, now it's access for all. What kind of boy does Eton want as a scholar? Surprisingly, perhaps, the headmaster, Little, says that he's not just looking for brain boxes, but for all-rounders who can rub along with other boys.
Well, let's take a look at the final score, and we may be the only organisation actually declaring a winner. Today, Sue and Jeremy had 4 points, but this week's winners are Francis and Jack with 5. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from This is Cornwall, sent in by Mr. Chesney in Newquay.
A local authority has been criticised for agreeing to a fact-finding trip for councillors to a lap dancing club. The committee chairman said, "We want to find out how these businesses operate and who the sorts of people are that visit them."
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Jack Dee, Sue Perkins and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chair script was written by Simon Littlefield, Lucy Clark and Roger Crooks, with additional material by Benjamin Partridge, James Kettle and John Hunter. The producer was Sam Bryant.